I would like to thank the organizer for organizing this amazing conference. Also, thanks for inviting me to be in this beautiful place. I'm going to talk about some recent work we have been doing relating some ideas in the Swampland program to a unification of the dark sector. This is based on four works, two of them past year, with Miguel Montero and Irene Valenzuela, the other one with Edu Gonzalo and Miguel and Georges Obid, and the one which just appeared with Jamie Law Smith, Georges Obid, and Annie Prabhu. And there's another work coming up with Cora Dvorkin and some of these colleagues I already mentioned. So dark energy and dark matter are perhaps among the most mysterious features of our universe. The two seem to be unrelated. The smallness of the dark energy in particular is a big puzzle. Also, the existence and the weakness of the interaction of the dark matter is another feature which requires explanation. And on top of all this, the quantum gravity seems to be unrelated to these, and if anything, it makes the things look more unnatural, for example, for dark energy. So the aim of my talk is actually to use some ideas from the Swampland program to say the story may be slightly different, and indeed, the quantum gravity consistency captured by the Swampland ideas could shed light on these. In particular, I will explain how the distance or duality conjecture can lead to unification of the dark sector. So the basic summary of my talk is basically going to be this slide. Basically say, the fact that the dark energy is so small in fundamental units suggests that there must be a light tower around the corner from this idea of this conjecture about the dualities, or distance conjecture. On the other hand, the existence of the light tower motivates of what is that light tower good for, and we claim it could very well be the dark matter in our universe. And this leads, therefore, to a unification of the dark energy and dark matter, because dark energy necessitates this tower. And it leads to a very novel, unexplored type of dark matter. So that's basically the quick summary of where we are heading. So the basic ingredient coming from the Swampland program is the so-called the distance conjecture, or duality conjecture. We'll hear a little more about it also from Irene's talk next. This basically tells you what we know in string theory. It's probably the most important things we learned from string theory, the fact that there are dualities. That is, when you change the expectation value of massive scalar fields, or light fields in general, when you go to far extremes, you always get a dual description. You never have the same description work everywhere. So at each corner of this landscape, we typically get a different description. And this description is triggered by the existence of a tower of light state whose mass go exponentially down with the dissonant field space. So if you go far in one of these directions, you find there's a tower whose spacing goes like e to the minus alpha phi, where I'm writing everything in Planck units and alpha is order one numbers. There is more to the story. From string theory, we are led to the further statement that this tower is either a Kaluza-Klein tower, where the small dimension d opens up to a bigger dimension capital D, or this tower consists of light string states. So we think we know what are the possibilities of these towers. For example, they are not the tower of light membranes. It's either a KK tower or light string state. There's strong evidence from string theory, and there are various checks of this in various works. And this is sometimes called the emergent string proposal. And in these cases, we can actually show that the distance conjecture is satisfied with the relation that the mass goes like e to the minus alpha phi, where this exponent is bounded below by 1 over square root of d minus 2, and bounded above by, depending on how many dimensions we open up, by this factor. So these explicit known constants are there. they're not just order one numbers, we can quantify it quite a bit. So this was in the context of Minkowski space. In the context of de Sitter and ADS, the distance conjecture has a generalization where the smallness of the cosmological constant leads to the prediction of a tower of light states. So it predicts that there is a tower, again, if you take lambda, the cosmological constant, or the, whether it's positive or negative, to zero, where the tower mass goes like some power of the cosmological constant. We have a lot of evidence for this in the case of ADS. For example, when you get a low curvature ADS, very large ADS, it invariably comes equipped with an extra space. Like in ADS 5 times S5, you cannot take ADS 5 to be big with S5 being fixed. S5 also gets big. The KK modes on that S5 will constitute the tower I'm talking about in that example. So it always gives this feature. We cannot just get an isolated ADS. In no example in string theory, we have that. So this predicts that this is a feature we cannot avoid. We cannot have an isolated ADS without such extra space which goes with it. Now, for the ADS, we have a lot of evidence for this, but it's natural also to, because of these arguments, to expect to be true for either sign, and therefore we expect there to be a tower also if lambda being positive and small. In that case, one can argue the exponent should be between a half and 1 over d. It should be less than a half by Higuchi bound, which is the, based on unitarity, because this tower of these particles has always a spin 2, and representations of the sitter for the spin 2 massive objects demands this condition. And the lower bound comes from the one-loop vacuum energy contribution from these light tower, weakly coupled tower. So I'm basically going to take this for granted, this structure I just told you here, and just run with it, see what we get in our universe. That's it. So this is up to here is the motivation coming from the Swampland and string theory. From this point onwards, whether we believe this or not is motivated from string theory. Let me assume this is true. We certainly cannot prove these. See what we get for our universe just with these assumptions. It turns out that combined with observational fact, well, first of all, we apply it to our universe, and remember, lambda in our universe is so small, 10 to the minus 122. So we certainly can view this as an example and look for this tower. And combined with observational data that Newtonian gravity valid up to 30 micron, it turns out there's only one option. The tower has to be a KK tower, and it has to come from one large extra dimension. So the two are fixed by the data we have. The gravity, we know the inverse square law of Newton works at least up to 30 microns by Adelberger et al. In 2020 and some related works by the Chinese group. And the only option we get is that there's got to be a KK tower with mass scale related to the cosmological constant in the milli-electron volt kind of region to electron volt region. The KK tower of the one mesoscopic dimension in the micron range. So that's the KK tower that we get. And this is what dimension, this extra dimension is what we call the Dirac dimension. This is different in motivation and prediction from the large extra dimension scenarios, which was studied a while back. That was motivated by attempting to explain electroweak hierarchy and trying to suggest that the weak scale is related to the fundamental Planck scale in a higher dimension. And that led to requiring two or more extra dimensions. Not like the one we are finding, so neither the motivation nor the parameter range we end up is the same as the other one. In fact, the fundamental Planck scale that we end up with in five dimensions is around 10 to the 9 to 10 to the 10 GeV, far bigger than the weak scale, but less than the Planck scale or Grandier-Phi scale. And with a length scale that we are expecting of the order of 0.1 to 30 micron for this extra dimension. It is interesting, you might ask, why are we getting one extra dimension? We don't have an explanation, of course, of that. We're just using the data that this is the only option given whatever else we know. But it's curious to know that from theory, there's one hint that one extra dimension is special. It turns out one extra dimension decompactation is consistent with a theoretical expectation that this can lead to the flattest potential, because there's a bound on the potentials coming in the Swampland program, which gives you such a bound, and this is the flattest. If you want to have a larger range for flat potentials, you need one extra dimension. It's curious to know whether this is actually connected to the feature we are seeing here. So what are the phenomenological aspects? Well, our brain should be localized in this fifth extra dimension, because if it wasn't localized, you'll get a tower of milli-electron volt to electron volt particles. For everything, you get a tower. That's not the case in our universe, so we better be localized. There are two potential applications in particle physics. There's an instability in Higgs potential at 10 to the 11 GeV, as we know from the data from the CERN. And this may be related to higher Planck scale, which is around 10 to the 10 GeV, just around the corner. Also, there could be connection to neutrino physics. The bulk fermions coupled to the, if there are bulk fermions in the fifth dimension, and if they couple to the standard model neutrino, which lives on the brain, they can play the role of right-handed neutrinos. And this was noted a while back in the context of large extra-dimensional scenarios. And in this context, actually automatically gives you the right range for the neutrino mass without fine-tuning. And this is correlated with the correct VEV for the Higgs. So in other words, the value of the Higgs mass, together with the size being micron, gives you the right neutrino mass without any fine-tuning. So that's quite a remarkable feature. And in fact, as I said, if you look at the tower of the KK modes, which if there are fermions, in addition to these active neutrinos, there could be sterile neutrinos, and their mass would be the similar range to the KK tower, which is not too far from the active neutrinos. And if you reverse it and say, I want to have a tower of active and sterile neutrinos to have a similar mass scale, you can explain the Higgs VEV. So in other words, you can revert back to the question of why is the Higgs VEV what it is. So for the rest of my talk, I'm going to talk about the cosmology of these models, which is rather interesting. I would like to present what I consider an appealing cosmological scenario. There are other scenarios in this dark dimension scenario by Anker Doogie, Antoniadis, and Luce, which have a slightly different version of cosmology, but I'm going to talk about this version I find rather appealing. So how could you have a cosmology in this setup? Well, if you have a thermal background, if you go back in the history of our universe, you end up with some place where you have a thermal beginning, and at least we know that's the case for the standard model fields. But it better be that the fields in the bulk do not have the same temperature, as it should not be in equilibrium with us. Because if they were, we would get a big problem with the cosmology, with the number of effective degrees of freedom would not be 3 that we know in the cosmology, or around 3, because of this light tower of the KK modes that we're going to get. If they are at the same temperature, the effect will be a huge number of analogs of the neutrinos if they were in equilibrium, and that would be in contradiction with what we know from cosmology. So it better be that at some point in cosmology, if this scenario is true, we are ending up with the standard model with some initial temperature, which is not in equilibrium, and in some sense, we should assume that the interior is not excited, the bulk is not excited. We should start somewhere there. How we got there, we don't know, but let's assume we got there somehow. So our universe, which is this standard model brain, is like a hot coal in this fifth dimension. We know that this initial temperature is bigger than 1 MeV, because if it's not, then you cannot explain the Big Bang nucleosynthesis. So at least we should end up with an initial temperature bigger than 1 MeV in this setup. Now, the interaction of the standard model brain modes and the bulk graviton is universal. That's because of Einstein theory. After all, graviton couples to everything, including the modes on the brain. So there is an interaction on the brain, which is coming from 5D graviton, where z is the fifth direction, if you localize it to the position of the brain, which I have said z equals 0, which couples to the energy momentum tensor on the brain. Of course, you can expand the 5D graviton in terms of its modes, KK modes, and the zero mode of it is R graviton, and the higher modes will be KK gravitons, whose mass should scale like n times the KK scale, or roughly speaking, like n over L. So you get, in this way, an interaction between the energy momentum tensor and the graviton, the higher dimensional graviton KK modes, basically the sum, which is only sensitive to the value of the wave function at the origin, which should go like 1 over root L, and if you plug it in, you get such a term. So this is universally predicting an interaction between our degrees of freedom and the dark graviton. Okay, so we have ended up here with this hot coal, which is our universe. What's going to happen? Well, there's the energy momentum tensor is excited in our brain because we're in thermal background. It's going to create, because of its coupling to this KK modes, inevitably, KK gravitons. So it emits, it couples and creates these KK gravitons, and most of the energy is going to be occupied near the initial temperature that you're at. So the modes that you're going to occupy mostly are going to be the towers close to the temperature that you're excited at. So you're going to populate the KK towers near the T initial, somewhere there. So you create these KK gravitons, and you cannot avoid it. What's going to be relatively tiny portion of the energy you're available, because the energy is mainly in the synapse of the brain, and you have just created these KK gravitons. It's kind of like an offshoot of that energy. However, radiation, we are in the radiation-dominated era at that time, presumably, and therefore the radiation will dilute much faster than matter. And after a while, this matter will become the dominant feature of that universe. So you can have this matter, which is kind of like just the remnants of this created from our radiation paths from our brain, could end up being the dark matter. So we want to explore the possibility that precisely these modes are the dark matter, these elements that we have created. But what fixes the initial temperature? We don't know what the initial temperature is. One question is there any initial temperature for which you create the right amount of dark matter, which is bigger than MeV, because we know it should be bigger than MeV? Is there such a temperature? But actually, there's also a theoretical motivation for the initial temperature, which I will want to say before actually telling you what the answer is. The initial temperature should be less than the mass of the moduli which fixes the brain. Otherwise, your theory is not four-dimensional. If you, for example, have a moduli which fixes the brain on the brain that standard model lives on, the dilation modes and the sizes and so forth, then if your temperature is higher, you will excite those modes, then your theory is not four-dimensional. So to have a four-dimensional cosmology, the initial temperature which the 4D cosmology sets in better be less than the mass of these modes. On the other hand, the decay rate of these modes, the decay rates of these dilation modes goes like m cubed over m Planck squared, because they are gravitational, so they should be suppressed by 1 over m Planck amplitude. So if you square it, you get this, and by dimension analysis, you get m phi cubed. But they should have decayed before the de Sitter takes over, before our universe goes to de Sitter, because after de Sitter takes over, we expect it to be eventually unstable of the Hubble scale, which is the de Sitter scale. So therefore, it better be that they have settled down, they have decayed before the Sitter sets in. So that means their decay rate should be bigger than the cosmological constant to the 1/2, which is the Sitter scale. And this means that m phi is bigger than lambda to the 1/6 in Planck units, where lambda is a dark energy. So if you want to make sure that the initial temperature is less than m phi, a nice way to guarantee this is the case is that if you start with T initial lambda to the 1/6. This will guarantee that you will have this property at least holding up. Lambda to the 1/6, if you put 10 to the minus 120 or so, is around 10 to the minus 20, which is around GeV scale. So indeed, this suggests that we should take the T initial to be around the GeV scale. But then you say, okay, how much matter do you create? This is the density of the dark matter creation over time. It simply follows from the energy momentum tensor coupling to the gravitons. You compute it, and you find how much matter you have created. And you ask, okay, as the universe is cooling off and going from radiation to matter-dominated era, at what temperature does the matter and radiation energy density become equal? You find, just by plugging in T initial, from lambda to the 1/6, you get this formula, and you find the matter radiation equality temperature is around lambda to the 1/4, which is this coincidence problem in our universe that is the same temperature in which the dark energy takes over. So it says that the matter radiation inequality is always the same as the dark energy taking over, which is, explains this coincidence problem. And there is no need for the anthropic principle to explain this coincidence. So the currently one explanation of why this is happening is anthropic. We don't need to have dark energy to be more fine-tuned than necessary, and this is what you get from that reasoning. Here, we don't need that. It automatically gives a relation like this. So we start with T initial around the GeV, and this gives the right amount of dark matter in the form of dark gravitons. So here it is, and here you have a profile around the GeV scale. But once they are produced, they decay. That's why in string theory, we usually don't care too much about KK gravitons. They are unstable. So I used to think that this means we should ignore KK modes, which are unstable. Who cares about unstable stuff? And that's a big mistake. Indeed, Dienes and Thomas, a while back, already pointed out that this could be an interesting candidate for dark matter because the graviton is, the gravity modes of the type we were talking about are only gravitationally coupled. They are weak. Even though they decay, it takes a long time for them to decay. Their amplitudes are 1 over m Planck. And once you do that, even though they will decay, it doesn't mean they will decay too fast. And you can easily estimate, just by assuming nothing but the fact that they are gravitational and nothing else, by order 1 parameters up to gravitational amplitudes being 1 over m Planck suppressed, you can predict how fast they decay. And that's what we assume. There's also one more parameter comes in, which is how smooth is the fifth dimension? In other words, how much violation is in the quantum number corresponding to the KK mode, which we don't a priori know, and this will be parameterized by a parameter delta, which is some order one number, the amount of violation of the KK modes in these decays. One finds that the dark matter as a function of time will go down, the average of these masses as they are decaying down, will go down with t to the minus 2/7. So their mass is going down. As we find out, it's crucial that their mass goes down. You need GeV scale to create the right amount of dark matter. But if they stayed there, they would be in contradiction with observation, actually. So the fact that they decay is crucial to be consistent with observation, as I will point out. You see, so you start with some initial time. You create them at some energy around GeV scale, and then it goes down in log scale with time, with the mass, which ends up somewhere here around 0.1 MeV type scale today. So this is the mass of the dark, the bulk of the dark matter, which is now shifting its orientation, shifting its composition down to this amount. In our model, the dark matter gives the kick velocities. In other words, as the gravitons are decaying to pairs of gravitons, the energy is not, the total energy, of course, is conserved, but the masses are not conserved because there's a KK violation number. So they give a kick velocity to the dark matter as they are produced. So it's a different model from the lambda CDM exactly because of that reason. Otherwise, if they just decayed down, and if they didn't move, just decompose to different lighter gravitons, nothing would be different between this model and lambda CDM. But there is a difference here in the sense that you're giving a slight kick velocity as they are produced. So you can ask, what is the kick velocity? You can estimate it. And if delta is of order 1, you find this kick velocity of the order of 10 to the minus 4 times the speed of light by putting order 1 parameters in this model. Now, this could, in principle, have less structure in the universe because as they are created, once you have created structure with dark matter, when they decay, they make it more fuzzy. And in fact, there are some tensions in the lambda CDM model having to do with too much structure at what's called the S8 anomaly, that you expect there to be less structure at a certain scale, and it would be interesting to check the consistency of this in this scenario and whether it resolves this problem. The fact that the fifth dimension is less than 30 micron experimentally observed by the inverse square law experiments leads to the fact that the dark matter mass today is more than 20 keV. But the dark matter not only decays, the KK gravitons not only decay to other gravitons, they also decay to standard model fields, because that's how they were created in the first place. So you have dark matter, again, going back to the photons or positron electron pair, etc. And in principle, there could be observable effects from that. So the rate of decay to the standard model field, well, the total decay rate of this dark matter field, as I already mentioned, gives you a T to the 27th exponent. And you can estimate the mass of the dark matter. It's going to be some power of lambda today to the 528. So as you can see, everything here we are getting can be written as some power of lambda. Here, that's 5 to the 28. And they decay to photons also. And the decay rate will be parameterized by some order 1 parameter I'm calling lambda, again, times m dark matter cubed over m Planck squared. Everything I'm assuming is natural units of Planck. And so therefore, only thing I'm letting is an order 1 parameter. If the dark matter was 1 GeV, this rate would be way too much and inconsistent with observations today. But precisely because the dark matter mass is going down with T to 7, this mass is going to go down and this rate is going to go down. So the rate of decay back to standard model field is getting smaller as it's going down in mass. Indeed, you can check the astrophysical bounds here. There are various astrophysical bounds we checked, having to do with various things like Lyman alpha, the 511 keV from the center of the galaxy, extra background lights, and various other experiments, new star and integral, but most importantly, the signature on CMB. So when the dark matter decays, it will affect the CMB spectrum because photons is the prominent one, and you will have some impact on that. And you find that this red region and above it is ruled out based on CMB. And so all these other ones are subset of this, so the main thing is coming really from CMB. And this is the mass of the dark matter today in keV units. And remember, we started with GeV. And here we are saying the mass of today's in keV units. And this is the parameter which I called order 1 coming from decay to our standard model field. You see the red region is barely above order 1 parameters in lambda, barely consistent in this scenario. And in fact, you'll get a region here which leads to the prediction that if this dark matter scenario is correct, the fifth dimension should be bounded below by around 10 micron. So not too far from 30 micron, which is observed. Now, this is a bit scary because actually there's an experiment happening right now which is trying to push this 30 micron down to 10 micron. So this is the inverse square law experiment happening near Vienna in Konrad Observatory by these experimentalists. They have put me as their theory support in this group, I'm proud to say. But at any rate, the idea is rather straightforward. It's like a Cavendish type or Utves type experiment where you have a disk with alternating regions of mass, less and more. More as you go around the circle, and a torsion pendulum, which has opposite kind of features with respect to the mass distribution. So you start spinning this disk, and as this disk is spinning, the pendulum will go back and forth because of the regions of higher mass and lower mass will alternate, and so it will be coordinated. It will oscillate with the same frequency because you're driving it with this frequency, and that's very effective in getting rid of noise. And that's what one does. And so it is basically this kind of geometry you will expect to happen. The frequency is not as fast as you see. It's like one period is going to be around 1,000 seconds or something. So this is much faster than it will actually be in the experiment. Anyhow, the timeline for this experiment is about 3 years. This is where it is, an hour away from the center of Vienna in the Konrad Observatory, inside the tunnel there somewhere. And they have started creating this trial version of this experiment. And so they tell me 3 years, and we'll see. Anyhow, there are various challenges that has to be handled, that all these details, which is very difficult for a theorist like me to figure out. But anyhow, they are very careful, and I'm optimistic that they will get some results on this, but we'll see. At any rate, this is what I wanted to tell you, that this simple idea from string theory in this context of swampland, that the distance conjecture implies a tower of light state, is motivating a unification of dark sector. And everything is described by powers of lambda, the dark energy. This is related potentially to a resolution of Dirac's dream. Dirac observed, why do we get these crazy large numbers or small numbers which seem like power law related? Well, everything seems in this scenario to be related to powers of the dark energy. The time today is lambda to the minus 1/2. The mesoscopic scale is lambda to the minus 1/4. The matter radiation equality is lambda to the 1/4. The fundamental Planck unit is lambda to the 1/12, and so on and so forth. So everything is pegged to some power of lambda of order 1. Now, why is lambda small? I have no idea, and I'm not explaining that at all. I'm just assuming from observation lambda is small. What we are pointing out is smallness of lambda has another features coming with it as a package, and that's what we are using. Of course, this is easily falsifiable, maybe too easily, I would say, for my comfort, because the precision of the gravity experiments for the inverse square law is just around the corner. We'll see what the result of the experiment comes out to be. And then also, there will be interesting to study further the detailed study of the structure formation in this scenario, which is going to be different from lambda CDM, and that'll be interesting to explore. Thank you for listening.
So say hi to them and raise your hands.
I think I have one here. So thank you for the very nice talk. What sets the dynamic of the extra dimension? So are you assuming scale factor?
What sets the size?
The dynamics. Well, is it time dependent, the radius of the extra direction?
The radius of the fifth dimension is set by the cosmological constant, and that's how we got it. So the bound is that you should have a KK tower, whose mass is related to the power of lambda. That was the distance conjecture, says that the mass of the tower is lambda some power, and it should be between 1/2 and 1/4. You can see that experimentally, everything is ruled out except the very end, 1/4. So the experiment basically tells us the mass is of the order of lambda to 1/4, and that gives you the size of the extra fifth dimension.
So you are not solving any five-dimensional Einstein's equation, some effect?
No, approach. We are not solving, again, we are not constructing the solution. So usually in string theory, we are used to, give me your solution. I'm not doing that. And this is the point of the swampland program, is what are the general features of all quantum gravities should be true. So we have tried to extract from what we know in string theory what these principles are, and I'm applying just those principles here.
Okay, thank you. I have another question, but I can ask you afterwards.
Okay, there's a question from the internet first.
Hi. Since your model is, your theory, right, is deviating from the traditional lambda CDM. And there is a lot of discussion about the H0 tension, for example, as a possibility of deviation from lambda CDM. Does your approach give you some hints or explanation of H0 tensions?
Well, good question. So there are, as you mentioned, lambda CDM has a number of tension, H0 being the most prominent one. There's also S8 tension and so forth. I don't see a priori how the H0 tension is going to be alleviated in our model, though it's certainly worthwhile studying. We don't know. The S8 tension, I suspect, will have some be impacted by our model, but that's required study.
We have a question online. Azadeh, you want to unmute yourself?
Hi, yes. Thank you so much for the very interesting talk. If I may, I have two questions. I don't know if my voice is clear.
We can hear you. That's fine.
Thank you. The first question is that if I remember correctly, you mentioned that your dark gravitons are only gravitationally coupled. So is that correct, that the decay of the dark matter to the sun or model particles is going to be gravitationally mediated?
Everything is suppressed by 1/m Planck amplitude. Yes, that's our assumption.
Perfect. question is that since the dark gravitons, which are your dark matter candidate, have spin to nature, do they source gravitational waves in a non-trivial way that leads to some observable signature?
Sorry, I didn't quite get. What gives rise to observational signatures? I didn't hear the first part of your question.
Yes, so I was wondering, since the dark matter here are the dark gravitons, and if I'm not mistaken, they have spin to nature, so they would source gravitational waves in a non-trivial way, which in the standard scenarios, we don't expect that. I mean, it's my naive expectation.
Would that lead to some observable...
Yeah.
Oh. No, their frequency is unfortunately not at the range that you can see in gravitational waves, unfortunately.
Okay. And your dark matters are warm dark matter, right?
The dark matter is these KK gravitons.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Andy.
Yes, yeah, so this picture beautifully explains different long-distance phenomena as sort of powers, related by powers of this scale. In this framework, are you hoping to get an explanation of why this scale is small relative to Planck or string scale, or is that just a problem for another time?
That's certainly not a problem that we are addressing here, except for the following. We are saying that there's a correlation between the tower being light and lambda being light. We say mass goes like lambda to some power order one, which means lambda is also mass to some power order one by inverting the relation, which sounds strange because from the viewpoint of effective field theory, because one would think that even if you have a light tower, lambda should go like m to some power plus lambda naught. There should be some UV contribution to that. So this is saying no, if there's distance conjecture, the light tower cuts off, not the heavy tower. So this, the distance conjecture says that somehow the UV physics is not what's controlling the lambda, but the IR physics, which is very different from the EFT. Something similar to this we see in string theory. For example, in the limit of G string going to zero, if the G string goes to zero, there's a light tower. In that case, the strings are the lightest tower. If you take the strict limit as G string equals zero, then M goes to zero. And from the analog of what I told you, lambda should go to zero. Indeed, as G string goes to zero, lambda is zero in all string theories, even in bosonic strings. Even in bosonic string, which has no supersymmetry, as G string goes to zero, lambda is zero, which didn't have to be the case. So we already are having such evidence from string theory, and if you ask effective field theory, why is it that your bosonic string theory has lambda naught equals zero as G string goes to zero, you're going to have a hard time explaining. We will say, well, there's a conformal symmetry, which SL2C invariance gives you a volume factor, which is infinite. 1 over infinite is zero, but that's the explanation based on string theory. We don't have any EFT explanation. So I would say that we are getting hints of this fact being true.
Awesome. Since there are a couple more questions, can Irini maybe at least come down if there's still...
Afterwards.
Yep, okay.
Thank you.
Let's thank someone again. Thank you.